sees in her shoes. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our eyes, whatever the cross may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing ground. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 2 of the Iron Maiden podcast. This one's entitled Power Slave and the World Slavery Tour. And about the first episode, thanks everybody for your reviews and your feedback on the episode. I really appreciate it, and thank you everybody who downloaded the podcast, and you know, so many of you liked it and sent me your reviews back, your feedback, everything. So, you know, thanks so much about that. Also to clear, a mistake, to clear the air, I made a mistake in the first podcast where I said that Iron Maiden were formed in 1980. I'm sorry, but Iron Maiden weren't formed in 1980, they were formed in 1975. 1980 was the date when they released their first studio album. So I don't know, I think I accidentally, said that. But anyway, Iron Maiden formed in 1975, not 1980, so I'm clearing that part out. Anyway, now getting back to episode number 2, Power Slave and the World Slavery Tour. Power Slave is one of my favorite albums, of all time, and my favorite Iron Maiden album. So I am really excited to do this podcast because I'm doing it on one of my favorite albums of all time. So anyway, let's start with a basic oral history about Power Slave. Power Slave was the fifth studio album by Iron Maiden, and was released somewhere, I think, in August or September of 1984. And it has about 8 tracks on it. I think it's, all 8 tracks on the album are amazing, because, the musicianship and the musical style that Maiden have portrayed on this album are amazing. Especially, the sound that they came out with on Power Slave is, fantastic. So let's start with the track list. I think the first song on the album is Aces High, which was written by Steve Harris. It was a single. I think it's a really good song. And it was, the opening track for the World Slavery Tour also. Started with Aces High. Churchill's speech before that, and then Aces High. Then we have 2 Minutes to Midnight, which was written by Bruce Dickinson and Adrian Smith. Now, the interesting thing about this song is that Bruce and Adrian started writing a lot of stuff together, and which turned out fantastically well. I think, the duo Bruce and Adrian, have put together some really good stuff on this album. So, 2 Minutes to Midnight, which is also one of the most popular songs on Power Slave, and I think Maiden have done that, have done 2 Minutes to Midnight on, I think, most of their tours. So, this one's really popular, 2 Minutes to Midnight. I think it's an amazing song. The song's basically based on war, the horror of it, and, how, man can be greedy, and, how war never ends, basically. So, I think 2 Minutes to Midnight, it's amazing. It's a really cool song, and it's got a lot of soul into it. So I think this was one of the, good songs, and on the album, actually all the songs are good. I said that before. Sorry. Anyway, moving to the next track, which was Lost for Words. This, song is an instrumental track. It's really good. I love this song because of the melody. It sounds really cool. Now this again was written by Steve Harris, and I think this is the last instrumental track I made. I don't think there is a single instrumental track on any other album, so I would really like to, listen to some of the instrumental stuff. I love Transylvania, and this was one of my other favorite instrumentals by Iron Maiden. Next on the track is next on the album, sorry, is Flash of the Blade, another amazing song. This was written by Bruce Dickinson himself, and it's a really cool song because it has a lot of melodies, and the style of music is amazing. Then we have The Duelist, which is written by Steve Harris, another good song on the album. For me, I guess this would be my least favorite song on the album. Not to say that I don't like it, I love it, but on the album I'd say this is my least favorite song. Moving on, we have Back in the Village. Well, I think Back in the Village, again, is an amazing track on Power Slave. Maiden did real justice to it. I guess the song was written now by Bruce Dickinson and Adrian Smith, so I guess it's just another masterpiece by the two of them. I love the guitar figure at the beginning, you know, the intro, the way it starts. So this, again, is I think is a really good song on the album. And last not least, the closing track of the album, and also one of Maiden's, you know, best work to date, "A Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner," an amazing, amazing song. It's the song is based on, you know, "The Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner," a poem which was written by Samuel Taylor Coleridge in the 19th century, sometime I guess. And this poem, you know, was used by Maiden, and it's basically a musical retelling of the poem. And I think the song has about two verses which are actually from the poem. So I think this again was an amazing song, you know, 13 minutes of, you know, just amazing, amazing music. And the song, the structure, everything was written really well. And the song was actually so long that Martin Birch, who produced Power Slave, said that they had to record the song in three different, you know, pieces. So again, I think, you know, this is, for me, it would be the best song on the album, "Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner." Moving on, I think the album did fantastically well. Power Slave was, again, one of Maiden's epic albums. I think it did really well in the UK. It went on number 2 in the UK albums chart. I think it went on number 21 in the US Billboard chart. So there again, it did really well in the singles. 2 Minutes to Midnight didn't make it to the top 10, but it went on 11 in the UK singles chart. And Aces High went to number 20 on the UK singles chart. So that again was cool. And I think the album went 2 times platinum in Canada. It went gold in Germany. It went gold in the United Kingdom also. And I think it went platinum in the United States. So I think that's how the Maiden Mania started in America. You know, they just went mad over Power Slave. And if you look at the World Slavery Tour set list also, you know, most of the dates on the, you know, tour are American dates. So I think that's, you know, the start of the Maiden Mania in the United States. Moving on, we have the World Slavery Tour to discuss, which was absolutely grueling on the band. Now, I think the World Slavery Tour was recorded on video and released as Live After Death, the third show of Maiden, which were at, I think, Long Beach Arena in California, was recorded as the video part and released as Live After Death, the video. And the audio was recorded the second day. And I think it also has, you know, a few tracks at the end, which were recorded at Hammersmith in London, you know, Rothschild, Phantom of the Opera. these tracks, which are on Live After Death, were not from Long Beach Arena gig. They were actually recorded at Hammersmith in London. Also, the audio does not have the song Sanctuary, which is in the video part of Live After Death. So, you know, so that shows that Maiden cut short one song on the second day. Now the set list for a World Slavery Tour, like I said in my previous podcast, I think is one of the best set lists so far. I think it's an amazing set list, and you know, I think it was really well arranged, the set list, because they basically play some of you know, the best of Maiden so far. And I sort of expected that on the Somewhere Back in Time World Tour, but they didn't play many good songs like "Flash of the Blade" and "Flight of Icarus," and you know, I was expecting a whole lot more. But nonetheless, the Somewhere Back in Time World Tour 2 was fantastic. But anyways, we were on you know, like the World Slavery Tour. Now the World Slavery Tour was grueling on the band. Grueling. They had show after show, and Maiden had never taken a break so far. So I think they were, you know, the World Slavery Tour really showed, you know, Maiden that they needed a break. And I think they took a vacation after the World Slavery Tour ended. I think it ended somewhere in July, I guess, July 1985. and Maiden took the rest of the year off before returning to the studio to do Somewhere in Time. So that clearly shows how exhausted Maiden were with, you know, the World Slavery Tour. Now, the World Slavery Tour, you know, did some magic for Maiden because, you know, that's where Maiden established themselves as, you know, a heavy metal band worldwide, you know. Now, like I said earlier, this, you know, tour was really long. So it started on the 9th of August, 1984. And it ended on July 5th, 1985. It ended at Irvine Meadows, California. And it started off in Warsaw, Poland. And now, again, about this, it was an amazing tour, like I said, because they took the tour to Poland during the height of communism. So such was the power of Iron Maiden. And that was, you know, the coolest part about it. They played at Poland at, you know, a time when, you know, communism was still in Poland, so I guess that was a huge thing for the band, and also a huge thing for the Polish people, because they were really happy about it, and you know, to see a metal band like Iron Maiden, you know, was it was like a dream come true, because there was an upsurgence of metal in the 80s, and you know, everyone around the world just started listening to metal. Well, it died again in the 90s, but in the 80s that was, you know, the resurgence of metal, and you know, everybody, you know, just wanted more and more of metal music, and that's why Iron Maiden, you know, reached that stage in their career where they became so popular, because firstly they were the pioneers of the new wave of British heavy metal. So they started off the tour in Poland, where they took Behind the Iron Curtain there, and they took a full, you know, they took the full scale. You know, a show to Poland, and it cost Maiden a lot of money, like the manager Rob Smallwood says in the History of Iron Maiden Part 2, which is on the Live After the DVD. He said it himself, that it cost them a lot of money to go there, and you know, they made very little out of that gig, but they did it for the music. So then again, Maiden proving themselves, you know, that it's all about the music, and it, you know, it's not really about the money. So the set list for the tour, it starts off with Churchill's Speech, then Aces High, 2 Minutes to Midnight, Trooper, Revelation, Flight of Icarus, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, Power Slave, Number of the Beast, Hallowed Be Thy Name, Iron Maiden, Run to the Hills, Running Free, and Sanctuary. Now Sanctuary, the last track, was only played at certain venues. I said earlier that it wasn't played, Sanctuary isn't on the audio version of Live After Death, whereas it is on the video version of Live After Death. So then again, was played at only at certain venues, although Live After Death was at the same venue. I think Maiden didn't choose to do it on the second show, but however, they did it at the third show. And that's how it, you know, went. Also, there were a few, you know, drum solos by Nico McBrain, and Dave Murray also would do this little solo. I think it was immediately after Power Slave. I think on the European leg of the tour, they, as well as a few American dates, I guess, they generally did, you know, an extra song between Revelations and Flight of Icarus. You know, like I said earlier, Brad Child, Murders in the Room, Morgue, Phantom of the Opera, Die With Your Boots On, you know, some of these tracks which are on Live After Death were actually played at London's Hammersmith Odeon, and they're not from the Long Beach Arena gig. Acacia Avenue also was played on the European leg, but they dropped it for the American leg of the tour. Now, Live After Death was the album, that the live album that they released after the World Slavery Tour, and based on reviews, this is supposed to be, you know, Kerrang calls it the greatest heavy metal live album of all time, and I think it's an amazing live performance by Iron Maiden. Like I said, the first 13 tracks were recorded at Long Beach Arena, and the rest were at Hammersmith in London. And the CD was released, I think, somewhere in December 1985. And the album had three sides of the, you know, the LP version. The fourth side was not included, but you know, I think on a reissue they included the fourth side also. Running Free, the song was shortened. The, you know, the part where there's a crowd interaction with Bruce, I think they shortened that part of it. And I understood why. That part was pretty cool. It's there on the video version of Live After Death, but the audio version was shortened. Nonetheless, I think Live After Death is you know, an amazing live album by Maiden. I think this was the first live album that Maiden did, and the next live album came after a period of, I guess, 7 years, when in 1992 they released the Donington, you know, Live at Donington. And I think then they released, you know, a real live one and a real dead one, which were from the farewell tour for Bruce, who left the band, I think, in 93. Anyway, we won't get to that. This is Power Slave and the World Slave We Tour. So, I think, like I said, Power Slave now was an amazing album, and the World Slave We Tour also, I think, you know, was one of Maiden's best tours. I think it's one of those, you know, huge tours which goes down in rock and roll history, and this definitely did that. Iron Maiden did a few songs from Power Slave. I expected them to do more, but nonetheless, it was. I think the setlist was combined really well. They did Aces High, 2 Minutes to Midnight, Rime of the Ancient Mariner, and Power Slave. From Power Slave, but they did Lost for Words, I guess, at some of the gigs from the World Slavery Tour. Now, the album, which was recorded in the Bahamas, I think, was released on the 2nd of September 1984, and Maiden released their live album, Live After Death, in 1985 of December. And it released originally on EMI in Europe, and its sister label, which is Capitol Records in the US, but the re-release was, I think, by Sanctuary in the US in 2002. Also, about I guess not many of you know this, but you know, the little intro to Power Slave was added in the, you know, 1998 re-release, I guess. The little drum intro to Power Slave, it was added to the song Back in the Village, which is the previous track to Power Slave. So I think that was added to Power Slave in 1998 in the reissue, and that's the CD that I've got. Now, many bands did you know, covers of the many of the songs in Power Slave. I think Glamour of the Kill did 2 Minutes to Midnight. Flash of the Blade did. Flash of the Blade was done by Avenged Sevenfold, and I think that's actually a really, really great cover. And I think Children of Bodom and Arch Enemy have done Aces High, and I guess Primal Fear 2 have covered 2 Minutes to Midnight. Now, Bruce Dickinson was, now getting back to the World Slavery Tour, Bruce Dickinson was really tired by the end of the tour, because I mean, it took its toll on Bruce the most, I guess. And you know, he was, I guess, 25. But like he said on the DVD, Live After Death, the history of Iron Maiden, he said he was 25 and he thought he did an exceptionally good job at the time. The bus that Maiden used, you know, to do most of the touring throughout the United States was disliked by, I guess, you know, some of the members of the band. But then, you know, then again, they had no other choice. The intro now to Aces High, which was Churchill's speech, was actually a speech by Winston Churchill, which was given, I guess, in the House of Commons or something. But so they used that as the intro, and it was recorded. The speech was somewhere during the World War II, I guess, 1941 or 1942, and they used that as the intro, you know, to Aces High, and it was played in all their concerts. They even played it on Somewhere Back in Time World Tour, and it sounds really cool. And the cover art for Live After Death was designed by Derek Riggs, and you know, it's really cool because it has a picture of Eddie rising from the grave, and you know, the grave has a tombstone, you know, which is a quote from you know, H.P. Lovecraft's The Nameless City, that which is not that is not dead, which can eternal lie, yet with stranger eons even death may die. So I thought, you know, all of that, it just looks really, really cool. And I think Live After Death was one of the first live albums I had purchased of any band, I guess. Or, no, actually, I got Metallica's SNM. But whatever, I also got, I think this is one of my favorite live albums. Now, the funny part about this was that, I guess on the tour, you know, at one of the shows, Steve Harris, his bass gear broke down, and Nico was doing a drum solo on that part of the tour. So Steve, you know, wanted Nico to extend his drum solo so that, you know, he had sufficient time to get his bass gear up and running again. So he, you know, he grabbed hold of one of the nearest lighting guys, and he asked him to give Nico the message. But, you know, eventually it ended up in a complete misunderstanding. And so, anyways, you guys have a listen at it.
Anyways, he did not deserve to get a bollock. At the time, I know why he got a bollock in, because you know, you don't know what the fuck
you're going to show up
about, but he didn't really deserve it. All he's trying to do is relay a message from me to you, right? And he went the wrong way about it, okay?
Yeah, he did go the wrong way about it. I tell you what, I mean, it ain't going to happen again.
I don't think we get steamed. I mean, if the trust was
why it got steamed up to Bruce is because it fucked me right off, and I knew there was a problem, and I still didn't know what it was, even after it. I fucked up. Stopped it. It was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Come on, kids, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, now's the time to tell me. What's the problem?
Can't you understand? If I ain't trying to get a fucking message through to you, right? It'd have been a lot worse. If I had got my gear done, as it happens, just in the nick of time I got it done.
I still didn't get the message.
I know you didn't. But what I'm saying, whatever happens, if I didn't try and get a fucking message to you, you know what I mean?
Sure, Steve, but the fact is that the guy was not angry the right way.
You don't think of things like that, Nick. Yeah,
but that's the thing.
I'm
on the other end on it. It's me that fucked up. I'm the one out there all on the other doing a drum solo.
I'm the one thinking that I've got fucking like a minute to go before me to get this fucking gear.
Yeah, if somebody gives a message to me, you know? I mean, it doesn't matter who it is. I mean, the message
is different. It's different for you. You're not standing there all on your fucking own having somebody try to get your attention and talk to you. I'm playing a drum solo, and the guy's standing a yard to 2 yards behind my drum line.
What?
What?
What? The fuck?
By the time I got that far, I'd fucking totally fucked. Because I'm not paying attention to my gig, I'm paying attention to what he's trying to do.
Yeah, nobody would have noticed.
I noticed.
I completely understand
that. Fuck me right up.
But he was only doing what I told him to do. And that's getting a message to you. Now that they're fucking eat at the moment and just everything like that, he don't think to fucking tell Bill. He wants to get the message to you, not the fucking Bill, so he don't think of that. He just tries to get the message to you, right? So he don't fucking deserve to get a bollocking for that. I mean, alright, he got one, I know. I'm not saying that, but I just don't, you know. Paul's a nice guy. He's not like he's an arsehole.
No, I know.
Or an idiot.
I know, but
like
he was out of order.
He wasn't out of order. He was wrong.
He was, because he fucked me up by trying to tell me. If he'd have come up to the riser, there, I could have fucking heard him.
But Nick,
cunt was standing behind, sitting down.
Yeah, he was wrong. He made a mistake, but he wasn't out of order.
It wasn't deliberate.
He made a mistake.
I didn't know that at the time, right? I still didn't know that Steve had a problem with his bass. Luckily enough, by the time I finished the Poxy solo, he had his bass working.
The creep was because
I bollocked him, and I happened to tell you, you go, don't bollock him, go and apologise. Like, fuck am I going to go and apologise to
him?
It's not for me to apologise. I bollocked him because he fucked me up. Rightly, he fucked me up. No. He was wrong.
He wasn't wrong.
He was. He did not handle it. He's not in fucking communication.
I don't fucking argue about this. You're stupid. I think you're really out of order. Honestly.
No, bollocks. I am not out of order.
You're out of order.
No, it ain't.
I know he did.
Well, he then that's out of order.
Look, I'm not saying he fucking meant to, Harry.
The fact is that give
me
off
not a dumb cough.
He's not fucking stupid. Well, he fucking certainly did a good job out there this afternoon, didn't he?
He made a mistake.
Because why did he make a mistake?
Because I...
You said him. How could he make a mistake?
That's right. How did he make a mistake?
Well, he made a mistake by not selling Bill first, right?
Well, he made a mistake, right?
Yeah.
Well,
there's a difference between making there's a difference between making a human error.
So he made a mistake, right?
Yeah.
And I'm briefed up because he fucking made me make a mistake. Now, now I can understand what he was talking about after the fact. It remains to be seen. He was on a mission from you.
I'm not going to argue about it.
Right? Fuck my old boots. It just... I can't handle that situation when people think some kind of heavy grief and it's important to me to get a message like that. Fucking hell. How can I get some... Well, I also fuck as well. I wouldn't have minded if I'd have got what it was happening straight. Like, on the end, oh, right, Harry's got his bass butt. Right, I'll carry on and do something else. Then that's fine. If I didn't fuck up. But it made me fuck. It totally threw me right out, and he didn't know how to talk to me about it. I told him, don't do that again.
It's not fair to relay message to people.
And he never turned around.
It could have been anybody. He was the first one on air.
Harry, he never even turned around afterwards and said, listen, I'm sorry, but you didn't understand what I was saying, right?
Oh, why should he?
Well, then because he got to stand up for himself, because he knows he was got a bollocking wrong, because he was sent on a mission from you.
He's probably fucking upset.
He's probably a bit upset.
Because you gave him a fucking bollocking.
Rightly. I told him, don't ever do that again.
No.
That's crazy. What happens if the lighting truss is going to fall down on your head? Does he go...
Well, then somebody drags me out the fucking way, or else I'm dead, right?
Yeah, but that, I mean... But
I think your attitude is
No, it ain't. If I'd have known, now I'm the fucking cunt all of a sudden.
No, you're not the cunt.
Because I've told him he was out of order, and I didn't know he was on a mission from you to tell me that his your base was fucked.
All you've got to do, Nick, I was just go to the guy and say, sorry about Shanny, it was a misunderstanding, but in future, tell Bill, all you've got to say. No. And that way, he's a fucking proud geezer. He does his job.
Oh, pride. No, it ain't pride. It's not fucking pride.
It is pride.
Oh, bollocks.
What's the matter with you?
The guy was wrong to have been fucking there to do what he done.
No, he isn't wrong. What was he supposed to do? Turn around
and... a different attitude, because this is fucking...
I've told him straight out not to do it again. I'm not going to go up and apologise for saying that to him. He was out of fucking order.
He's not out of order. What happens if I fucking go and tell somebody to do something, he goes, no, fuck off, I'm not going to do that.
Listen, Bruce.
Then he's out of order. Bruce. Steve goes and tells him to go and do something.
I'm not concerned with other people that can't fucking talk to me on stage, who don't know how to fucking communicate with me.
But he's not out of order.
He does not know how to communicate with me.
Some cunt's recording this.
I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did, because I surely had a good laugh by the end of it, and the argument was actually secretly recorded by Bruce, who was winding Steve and Nico up throughout the fight. So it was really funny, and at the end Steve figures that somebody's recording this, and basically they suggested that it would make a great B-side. And so they put it on the B-sides, and I think it's on the 2 Minutes to Midnight B-side. Some of the funny stuff that goes on tour. Anyway, getting back to Power Slave and the World Slavery Tour. The reason that I love Power Slave as an album so much is because, structurally it's just so powerful. I mean, it's an amazing album. For a fifth studio album, I think it's just fantastic. Made definitely the heavy metal to a whole new level with this, and I think they this is definitely one of the greatest heavy metal albums of all time, and even the World Slavery Tour, a grueling tour, and like all of the World Slavery Tour was extremely harsh in the band, but at the end of it they made and definitely established themselves as one of the powerful heavy metal bands around the world. They did Rock in Rio, where they played to about 300,000 fans. They were special guests to Queen, and I think that's when South America went Iron Maiden. So they did do a terrific job. However, at the end of it, I guess Bruce felt a bit sick, and they had to cancel a few shows at Radio City Music Hall in New York. But you know, nonetheless, it was some amazing work, amazing work. So I just want to thank everybody who's been listening to this, who had been listening to the previous podcast, and thank you everybody for sending in your reviews. If you have anything more to say or any reviews on this episode, you can always write in your comments at the website, which is the Iron Maiden podcast.mypodcast.com, or you can also send in your reviews on iTunes. The podcast is available for download on iTunes, so you can download it through iTunes also. You can also send in your feedback to the Iron Maiden podcast at gmail.com. Thank you everybody who's been listening to the podcast so far, and who's sent me such great reviews about it. This is my second podcast, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thanks, and up the irons. To end the podcast, here's a cover of 2 Minutes to Midnight by Primal Fear. We'll be right back.